Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here in the 10 o'clock hour. Lots of calls today so far. We're going to continue to do that. 404-872-0750. We've got calls about quality companies, individual companies that people are a little worried about, stocks that haven't gone up. Why is that the case? As we go through these market corrections, one thing that gives me some peace of mind or resolve is that if I know that I own companies that aren't going anywhere, even though the stock price might be down 10 or 15% because the market itself is down, then I still feel great about that. I still feel good about it. Now, I'm not in retirement, so I think it's easier if you're under the age of 50 and you still have another decade to go before you're going to stop working. I think it's you look through these periods of time and you've got to be a buyer into weak markets, even though things probably do get a little worse from here. We might go down another 5 or 6%. From here, and we might get to the bear market territory level. But if you're under 50, you've got to be a buyer in that. That's the way you make money over time. Not when you're buying into the Dow at 18,300. You're making money when the Dow dips under 16,000. That's really how we make money. It's when we're buying lower, and we all know this. You know this. It's just it's really emotionally difficult to do it at the time. Because again, every time we have a correction, there's a new boogeyman around the corner. And this one, it's the fear of that unknown that maybe this one is the next financial crisis. Nobody knows exactly for sure. The evidence, though, from a macroeconomic perspective is that it's not. We're not going into another 08. If the macroeconomic variables or data points point to that, then I'll tell you. I'll let you know if I think we're going to another 08. Right now, we're just not. The economic variables and the data just doesn't point to that. Low oil, by the way, doesn't put us into recession. High oil prices do, but not the opposite. And we're in a period of time where oil is at $30, which is good for the overall economy, bad for big oil companies, bad for states like Alaska and Texas and Oklahoma, but good for the majority of consumers. The average consumer is going to save $1,500 this year. $1,500. The average person who drives 16,000 miles a year, you save almost $1,500. If you're making $1 million a year, I know that doesn't you probably don't even notice it. If your family has an income of $50,000 a year, closer to the median family income in America, that's a big deal. That's a huge tax cut. So there are a lot of cross currents here, and the market in 2016 has been tied to oil, and oil has been in free fall. Now we got a bid at the end of last week, and oil actually went up a couple percent. Well, the oil actually the numbers here are unbelievable. The lower oil gets, the bigger these percentage moves have gotten. By the way, oil for 2016 started the year at 37. Today it's at 26.5. Or it dropped to 26.5 midweek, then back up to about 32 for the week. Barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude. So we dropped 28%, and then we're up 21%, still down about 13% year-to-date. So oil down 13% year-to-date, down the S&P, down about 7. By the way, China's not completely falling apart, even though the world seems to think it is. Still, fourth quarter GDP grew at 6.8%. It's the slowest in 25 years, but the fears that a slower China will implode the entire global economy are overblown. Now, do we have a little bit more to go in this market slide? The answer is nobody knows exactly for sure. Could we continue to fall from here? The answer is absolutely we could. Commodities and oil and small cap companies and banks all are in that 20% negative bear market range. So it wouldn't surprise me if the emotion of this market pulls down stocks another 5% or so that hits us towards that bear market level. As of Wednesday, when the market was down midday 550 points, we were down 15% from the high. Interesting note here about oil. Two of the last three times oil jumped 9% in 1 week, which is what happened this week. So the rebound of the last few days of this past week was which was a big jump, and 9% for the week. Two of the last three times oil jumped 9% in 1 week happened within the same week that the markets bottomed. March of 09 and August of last year when the correction bottomed. So pretty interesting thought about watching oil and watching markets. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK is the number here in the studio. The theme today, I want to talk about this word capitulation. That means investors throw in the towel. Why is that so famous? Well, it's because it usually means a bottom, but there's some misunderstanding about really what capitulation looks like, and I want to talk about that. But let's go to the phones here first. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. We'll start with Thomas, who joins us from the great state of Canton. Thomas, how can I help?
Hey, Wes. Thank you, sir, for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Really relevant discussion. I'm a new investor in Wells Fargo, and I'm doing it for the long term. Great dividend, well-capitalized company. You know, been around for over 100 years, aware of that. And I wanted that to round out kind of my finance segment of investing. So my question is very specific to that, Wes, is that this new paradigm of online internet loan companies, mortgage providers, they're popping up everywhere. It's kind of a huge onslaught of these companies. And my question is kind of relevant to your earlier commentary on the Apple BlackBerry paradigm. Is there any possibility that this could be a paradigm shift, not just a temporary thing, but a shift in the way that banks are going to do business with loans, and that's going to carve out a big part of the traditional brick and mortar bank companies, great companies like Wells Fargo? That's the specific of my question.
It's funny. I'm getting visions of Rocket Mortgage commercials. I don't know if you've seen those, but they're very prevalent now online. You're trying to watch something online and you see this Rocket Mortgage video, and it reminds me. So this is a great question. What Thomas is bringing up is this worry of when we were talking about quality in the 9 o'clock hour, and I gave some examples about companies that really ended up not having any quality or staying power at all. Blockbuster was an example. RIM or BlackBerry is an example where that was a $70 billion company in 07, and
right,
25% of the global smartphone market. Now today, it's 1% in America, and it's a $3.5 billion company. So it has had a 90% decline in value. And who knows if it'll be around in 3 or 4 years from now, or 2 years from now. So we worry about these companies going away when you introduce, particularly in the examples we're talking about here, new technology. Netflix put Blockbuster out of business. Apple basically put BlackBerry out of business, right? And so I think you have a really relevant question, Thomas. Does this prevalence now of online mortgage lenders and companies, does that threaten in a significant way big banks and mortgage companies as well? So I think it's a super relevant question that you bring up here. And I think that in some cases, you could see a one-trick pony type company get materially impacted or negatively impacted from a new development like this. Now, a couple thoughts, though. Number one, remember, this whole online lending thing, I think we've seen a resurgence of it, but it is not even remotely new. I mean, think about LendingTree and commercials. I mean, we're talking a decade ago, online lending and mortgage companies were still really prevalent. Now, those were more lead services than they are today. They were more marketing than they are, I think, today. But that, so it's not as new as I think that it seems, as though when we see the prevalence of Rocket Mortgage commercials going on and on and on. But also then you got to look at a company like Wells Fargo. Well, okay, sure, the numbers are pretty clear. Wells Fargo is gigantic. They're about $250 billion company. So they're big. And they don't rely, though, and this is, I think, the key point on this, they're not relying on one thing. So BlackBerry relied on that one piece of technology. Somebody better comes along and boom, they're irrelevant. Wells Fargo, you look up what their revenue streams come in, and this goes back to a quality company has a diversified revenue picture. they 36% of their revenue is investment management and trust management. The mortgage banking is only 16%. Deposits and charges for just holding your money at Wells Fargo, 13% of the revenue. Fees, 11. Credit cards, 8%. You've got other non-interest income at Wells Fargo is another 8%. Insurance is 5%. You've got trading fees, net trading, their trading division, another 3%. So if Wells Fargo were a one-trick pony, then they wouldn't be a high-quality company, but they're not. They're not one-trick at all. So I don't think that the prevalent, to your question, I think it's a really smart one, but I don't think they're in the camp that gets chopped down by something new that comes along. Here's the other thought, is that, and I think about the robo-advisor space. Think about Betterman and Future Advisor and some of these robo-advisor companies. What's been happening to them? Well, they're getting to the point where they might be worth $100 million, $200, $300 million, big. But then what happens? So a company like BlackRock, which is a trillion-dollar type company, or they manage $2 trillion, they're several hundred-billion-dollar market cap or $100 billion-plus, what do? They go and they say, you know what? I don't want to deal with the worry that these new competitors disrupt my business and put me out of business.
So what if, buy them.
Exactly. Just like, if you think about this, remember, Blockbuster could have bought Netflix for $50 million, that's like pocket change right today. That would have been one of the best buys in the history of the world, but they didn't. And then they went out of business. So what happens is that you get a company that's big enough, it's well capitalized enough, like a Wells Fargo. And if they really get threatened by some of these online mortgage businesses, what do? They just buy them. They take the hit today. They spend $50 million, $100 million, $200 million, which to some extent for a quarter of a trillion-dollar company is pocket change if they're really threatened. So to answer your question, Wells Fargo is not threatened, in my opinion, by these online mortgage companies. And if they are, guess what? They'll scoop them up. All right. We're talking about quality, sustainability. Can companies survive and last? Smart question by Thomas about that very issue happening in the financial services, the mortgage industry. And we went through a company like Wells Fargo that's not a one-trick pony that, again, makes it so that they'll likely be around. They're not going away anytime soon. Doesn't mean their stock doesn't fluctuate, but the sustainability there, there's a high level of sustainability because their revenue streams are really diversified. 404-872-0750, the number in the studio, 1-800-WSB-TALK. You're listening to Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on WSB Radio. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. Let's go to Maria, who joins us from Alpharetta. Maria, good morning.
Good morning. I just have a question. I wanted to know about IBM and Hewlett-Packard, if you think that they're good companies and they would be survivors.
Well, it seems like we struck a chord today with this conversation about quality and sustainability. Are these companies going to be around? I think that IBM, to me, is a little bit of an easier answer because they've gone through these big transitions before. I mean, they've been around forever, obviously. They went from, remember, IBM making typewriters?
Right.
And then that transitioned into PCs and to laptops. And then they're, to some extent, out of that business. And now they're a server company and a big data company, but they're transitioning to a cloud company. So, and they've got tremendous revenue, so they have the ability and they've got the base to be able to make a change. So they're super profitable still. It's all about, the question though is about growth. So IBM's numbers are pretty astounding. They have a $56 million per day EBITDA, which is effectively their earnings before interest and taxes and depreciation, but $56 million per day is what they effectively earn. The problem right now with the stock is that they haven't been able to accelerate all of those profit numbers, which again, we talked about how it's great to be a profitable company, but Wall Street only really rewards you if you are growing your revenue. So I think that IBM has the ability with the profitability they have today to make the transition into really a cloud company. And at some point, see, the problem with the stock is that it trades at only 10 or 11 times earnings. The S&P 500 trades at 15 times earnings. So they have a multiple problem. Look at a Facebook. A Facebook, it's trading at 100 times earnings because they're growing so rapidly. IBM's trading at 10 times because they're kind of stuck in the mud right now. Doesn't mean they're not profitable. And they have the ability, and they've got some time. They've got probably a lot of time in order to make the transition. So I think a company like IBM certainly has the potential to do that. Hewlett Packard has already done this split, and the new HPE is effectively trying to do that same transition, which is evidently a leaner and meaner company. I think that's a much tougher call. So I think IBM to me is there's more visibility with IBM than there is HPE. With that, we've got more questions.
Now back to Wes Moss of the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here Sunday morning. It's 35 minutes past the hour. It's 30 degrees on Peachtree. We came in this morning, it was 25, everything frozen, and now it's already up to a warm 30 degrees. Good morning. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. We've been talking about quality today. So you're saving retirement. I know it's been a hard start to the year. 2016 has been rough. Oil prices keep cratering. They've been tied at the hip to equity prices or stock prices. That's why you see oil for the year is down about 13-14%. The market itself, the S&P and the Dow, are both down about 7%. And this is a period of time where you get nervous. And plus, off the high that was back in May of 2015, if you look at Wednesday, at the nadir of the market, we were down about 15% from the high. So we're close to bear market territory. That's a tough start to the year. When we go through these periods of time, these unsettling times, knowing that you own a quality stock or a quality bond and that both pay income, that's what helps me just stay calm. That's what should help you stay relatively calm and give you resolve to continue on. That doesn't mean that the investments that you do have won't go up and down in price. And we go through these periods of time, we go down in price. So it doesn't mean, just because you own quality doesn't mean it gets rid of all the market fluctuation. But as long as you've owned quality companies, it has weathered every storm. Every correction, bear market, recession, depression that we've gone through, high quality companies have made it through. So the question is, what do you own? Do you own high quality companies? And if you do, and you have some diversification within that, then you probably feel fine as you go through these inevitable periods of time. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK is the number here in the studio. And we've gone through questions about quality, and we've talked about different companies today. And we still have this worry, hey, has the market bottomed? Have we gotten to the point where we can say it's this all clear signal, and is everything just going to get better from here? And that I know is a question that investors are constantly asking themselves. Now, there's some interesting notes though about this thought about capitulation. And these thoughts about, hey, well, at what point have enough investors just thrown in the towel to say, hey, I've thrown in the towel, and now I can feel better about finally putting in a bottom? One of my favorite financial writers, Jason Zweig, wrote this weekend in the Wall Street Journal. He writes about consumer and behavioral finance, how we behave emotionally as investors. Jason Zweig, again, writes about this, what is to some extent a myth of capitulation. I don't think it's a complete myth, but we've been hearing about, hey, we know we're at a bottom when we get either a white whale or a black swan or some sort of behemoth company that goes down. And you look at some of these big companies around the world, Freeport, MacMahon, gigantic mining company down 75%, some of these oil companies down 50%, big oil companies down 50, 60, 70%. Do we need to see one of them go out of business to kind of mark the bottom? Like long-term capital. Remember back in the late 90s, a big hedge fund just went out of business? It was kind of the bottom of that particular correction, and then we moved higher from there. But what's interesting, though, is that markets often bottom out more with less of this big bang, oh, this capitulation, now we can go up from here, and more with just this really kind of a whimper. That's when markets really bottom. You go back to kind of some more scary examples. Go back to the Great Depression. And you go back to 1929, 1932, the Dow was at 381 back in 1929 and dropped all the way down to 41. It was an 89% drop. Again, we went into the worst economic period in modern history. But when the market topped before that, it traded at 4.5 million shares. When we hit the low about three years later, there was only 721,000 shares that traded. Now, again, those numbers that was many, many years ago. Now we trade 4 million shares in 3 minutes. But on a relative basis, volume was down 84% when the market finally bottomed. March of 2009, the S&P hit that scary number, 666, on the S&P 500 on volume. That was the very low for the financial crisis that we just went through in 07-08-09. Volume that day was 12.5 billion shares. That was actually below the average that we had seen and far below where the market had traded 6 months prior. So fear, is there a little bit of fear in the market today? Yes. Is there a little bit of panic? Yes. But what's even scarier is when you hit this just quiet despair where nobody seems to care. So that's the scenario that we're looking for, and we haven't necessarily seen despair yet. I can tell you there is certainly that those thoughts of panic and people wanting to sell and get out of the market, and I get that. But we're not in at any point of this just people giving up point in this despair where nobody even cares. We're not at that point yet. Does that mean we have another huge down leg to go? Probably not, because remember, what really matters is the economy, stability of the economy, which then allows the majority of companies, not all companies, to be able to grow incrementally or little by little every year. And if we can do that, if companies can do that, then that earnings growth is what makes the market go higher. Can't do that in a terrible economy. You can in a flat to slightly growing economy, call it a B minus economy in the world we live in today, but not a D and not an F as far as the grade for the economy. So we're not at this capitulation yet. There's a little bit of a misnomer about capitulation, and a great article by Jason Swag. I will try to post that on our Facebook page. Wes Moss Money Matters, by the way, on Facebook. Now I go back to owning quality. Well, actually, we've got several calls on hold. Ryan, do we have time for, we do have a little bit of time for some calls. Let's do this. Let's go to the phones. Don joins us in Tyrone, from Tyrone. How can we help, Don?
Hi, good morning. I got a question about the gas tax. Actually, the price of gas has gone down considerably, and everybody applauds it, or most people applaud it, except the governments. Their revenue is going down every time a dollar goes down on gasoline sales. How are they going to maintain their infrastructure? Or are they going to raise taxes somewhere else?
Well, okay, so interesting question. Good thought, Don. Here's what's interesting, and I'm getting some of this information from Ryan Ely, who has a grandfather who was in the Weights and Measurements Division in the Pennsylvania government. So he knows a little bit about how these get these municipal revenue streams. But interestingly, lower gas prices don't affect tax revenue, because the federal gas tax is fixed at about 18.5 cents per gallon. Now, Georgia has the lowest state gas tax in the United States, 7.5% tax. But it's 7.5 cents, but that's fixed as well. So I know there's this worry, hey, wait a minute, what happens to tax revenue? How are we going to pay the debt on our municipal bonds here in Georgia? Well, again, it's the reason you get these high quality municipal bonds is that many of the covenants go into a fixed position, like exactly what we're seeing here. So lower prices for gasoline, that actually doesn't affect tax revenues. It's 18 0.4 cents to be exact, cents per gallon federal, and 7.5 cents here in the state of Georgia. 404-872-0750, the number in the studio. We're going to Steve, who joins us in Stockbridge. Steve, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can we help?
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good, good.
Question. I'm with a current company that just got bought out by another company. My current company does have a pension, but when this new company takes over, they don't have a pension. My current company is going to send me my pension check whenever the new company takes over, and I like to have an idea where would be a good place to put that pension money, that check I'm going to get.
Okay, so are you already getting your pension right now?
No, no. When the new company takes over, they're going to send a check to everybody, you know, their pension check, because the new company doesn't have a pension.
Got it. So you're okay. And what are the numbers then? So what is your what is the decision you've got to make then now, Steve?
Well, it's roughly about $220,000.
Okay. And do you have, by the way, do you have a choice on that, Steve? Are you able to say, no, I want to continue to get a monthly amount? Or are they just saying, look, you're getting the 220 grand no matter what?
They're going to give you a check for 220, and it's your job to do what you want to with it, invest it or whatever you want to do with it.
Got it. Okay. Well, then the question is then for you, how many years until you're actually in retirement? Or are you already there?
No, I got about 5 more years.
5 more years. So how old are you?
57.
So you're going to be still a pretty early retiree. You're shooting for 62.
Correct.
And I guess the question then is, what are you doing with this money? And that's probably why you're calling.
Correct. You know, what would be a good idea? Where would be a good place you think would be to put it?
Well, this is going to be retirement money, meaning that lump sum, those lump sum pension numbers usually go into IRAs. So that's got to go into an IRA, first of all. That's kind of, you've got to check that box as the first thing you do. The second thought is that how have you already been investing over these years? Do you already have a 401k? Do you already have some diversification? Do you already have a strategy? Or is this kind of a new thought that you've got to, you're starting from scratch here?
I do have a 401k.
Okay. The thought here is that you're in a little bit of a gray zone. You're still accumulating, you're still saving, you still get an income, and you're not in the complete distribution phase. So you don't have to be, you still want to get some growth here, but you've got to balance that and worry about, you don't have a whole lot of time before you're going to be completely relying on this money, right?
Right.
So the question is, what is a safe balance for you? And we've talked about quality today. You can own higher quality stocks and higher quality bonds, and you can do that in the context of an ETF, a low cost ETF. And I think that's where you want to start here, is that you want to have diversification within an ETF that might hold 30, 50, 100 of these companies that are all bundled into a really low cost vehicle for you to own, and then you can build your allocation from there. The question is for you, how much should you have exposed to the markets? Meaning that on the stock side, which is the volatile area, how much exposure do you really want to have? I would contend that for somebody your age, you still have a ways to go. You still have 5 years before you're even 62, and then hopefully multiple decades when you're in retirement. You've got to have at least half of your assets exposed to high quality companies in the market.
Okay.
And that is a good starting point for you. I call that the growth bucket, but the growth bucket should have a focus. And this is just my philosophy. There's a lot of ways to do this, but on companies that are paying dividends. You don't need the dividends yet. You're not going to spend the dividends yet, but you're going to be reinvesting and reinvesting and reinvesting for now. And that's, I think, your first starting point. And that needs to be done inside some sort of IRA. So that is, you've got to design a plan where you're comfortable with about half of those assets, half of that $220,000 at least. So call it $110,000 that's in companies that you feel very safe with, secure with, that gives you the resolve to get to that age 62. And some of the companies we talked about today may fit into that category for you. You're listening to Money Matters, 404-872-0750. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. Straight ahead, news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Active show today with lots of calls. We're talking about an extraordinarily important topic, which is, do you own quality? We go through periods of time like we've gone through with a really difficult start to 2016. You've got to have confidence in your portfolio and the investments that you have that they can make it through that. And you go through the last decade or so and you think about the companies that have gone away. We talked about what happened to Blockbuster. We talked about what's happened to BlackBerry. And then, of course, the more, even more famous, now BlackBerry's not out of business, but they've effectively gotten a 90% cut in market cap and revenue and market share, 95%. And then you look at some of the big bankruptcies over the years, Lehman and Washington Mutual and WorldCom, General Motors, the first time or the second time, CIT Group. There's a theme there of this overburdening of debt and over leverage and over leverage to one particular area and not a diversified income stream or revenue stream. And those are the companies that are vulnerable to a new product, a new technological advancement, development, and they can go away. So you've got to have the companies that have high credit ratings and a diversification of several of those companies that have a balance sheet that can handle the debt that they do have. They can service it, and they're in an industry in a position where they're doing business all around the world. And in multiple countries around the world with multiple products around the world. That's why when times get a little bit scary, I like to zoom in. Even though I'm a macroeconomic thinker, I like to zoom in on companies and just make sure I understand the quality of the company so that I know it'll be around. And I want you to be able to do the same thing. That's important, particularly when we go through difficult times like today. So with that, thanks for tuning in today. If you want to find me and our team, you go to yourwealth.com, yourwealth.com. You can set up a time to talk with me and the Money Matters team. We're happy to do that and check out and do an x-ray into what you own so that you have confidence moving forward. Up next, Adam Goldfein, news, weather, traffic, right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.